This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's American Politics Today. We're about to speak to Brent McMillan, who's the National Political Director of the Green Party of the United States. Welcome to Utopia Media's American Politics Today.
Good day.
As I was looking over who had visited our website today, I noticed on Google News that there were exactly two articles about an important bill to create public financing for congressional elections, and that was the interview that we did last week with Barney Frank and a press release from the Green Party of the United States pretty much denouncing this legislation. And I'm talking to you now to get some more details about the Green Party's objections to the Frank Obie legislation and to get your own views on how public financing of elections ought to be done, if you think it should. So why don't you start by telling us, just in the briefest terms, what the Green Party's position is on the public funding of elections campaigns.
Sure. In general, the Green Party is in support of publicly funded elections. Now, this particular bill, H.R. 4694, I think it's what I would call a Trojan horse bill. On the surface, it appears to be about clean elections or publicly funded elections. But really, what it's about is it's an anti-third party bill. And basically, Obie and Frank went behind the back of Tierney, who was working on a clean elections bill, H.R. 3099, and wrote this bill, H.R. 4694. Now, the interesting thing is Obie faced a challenge from Mike Miles in 2004, a Green Party candidate for Congress, as well as the other signers on here have also, many of them have faced challenges from Green Party candidates. So we really saw this as an attempt on their part to shut Greens and other third parties out of the congressional races.
Okay, give us a little background from your point of view about what this bill would do and how it would work, the Obie-Frank bill.
Well, for example, for third parties, it adds this additional requirement, not just the hurdles that we normally face, both to get our ballot line as well as to get our candidates on the ballot, but it also adds this additional hurdle where we would need to gather at least 10% of the signatures. I believe that's relative to the previous election and the highest funded candidate.
Now, what kind of funding does the bill provide for Democratic and Republican candidates?
Well, let's see here. Right off the top, I can't remember the numbers exactly
right,
in terms of the amount. But it clearly, it's setting up a kind of a class system. In other words, the two major parties are treated as one class, and everybody else is treated as another class.
Is there any, have you heard any reason why this is justified by the sponsors of the bill?
I haven't, and it's interesting because I listened to the interview with Barney Frank, and clearly they don't want to talk about this. I mean, they skirt it whenever they're asked about the actual implications in this regard.
Okay. So from the press release that you put out and some links from that press release, you're saying that it says that candidates who third-party candidates who don't qualify for the public finance are not entitled to spend any money on their campaigns?
Well, that's correct. Like, if we don't get that 10% of signatures, which is a very large requirement, by the way, that we cannot spend any money that's privately raised. And on top of that, just to get those signatures, it doesn't even allow for paid petitioners. In other words, we can't go out and hire petitioners to gather those signatures. It has to be an entirely volunteer effort.
Well, if it's true and no independent expenditures can be made on behalf of the third parties either?
That's right.
And the candidates can't spend their own money?
Yeah, I mean, basically just shuts third parties out altogether.
So what's your view on the constitutionality of this measure?
Well, it sounds very unconstitutional.
Now,
it's interesting because we're actually, I just got back from a hearing in federal court February 2nd up in Pennsylvania. There are two states in the country which have double hurdles, if you will, for candidates to get on the ballot, Pennsylvania and New Mexico. And we're in the process of trying to get a really high signature requirement in Pennsylvania struck down as unconstitutional. And here we see this come along where, you know, they're really trying to close the door. I think what's happening here is that the Democrats and Republicans are running scared because they see in the polling that their support is declining over time. And clearly the political vacuum that's being created in this country as a result of that decline is immense, and parties like the Green Party, the Libertarians, and others are working to move into that political vacuum. And they, I think they see it coming. They see that our candidate recruitment is at an all-time high. We're recruiting very high-quality candidates for this cycle. Each of the last three cycles, we've gained ground, and each cycle got more and more votes for our candidates. And so they're going to try to head us off from mounting a significant challenge.
Now, speaking of the constitutionality of the measure, Representative Frank, when I interviewed him, and the bill itself, stresses that it has a provision, it expects that the bill will be declared unconstitutional, and calls for an expedited consideration of a constitutional amendment to overturn Buckley versus Vallejo, which establishes the right to spend money as though it were free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that provision, and how does that tie into what you've just said about the of what you're presuming is the unconstitutionality of this measure?
Sure, I'm somewhat familiar with that, but what's interesting is that the Supreme Court also, I think, wrongly has developed a body of law in which they basically argue that it's in the interest of the stability of the state to only have two political parties, which we would definitely challenge. I think you'll find that third parties have brought in important transformations in our society, not the least of which was the Republican Party, which is the third party that brought in the anti-slavery, for example, or when there were, you know, past challenges from other third parties that brought in things like Social Security and 40-hour work week and end of child labor. These were all things originally brought forward by third parties. And so, in essence, they're shutting down this way for the people to challenge the two parties when they really begin to err or move away from the majoritarian positions within this country.
Now do you think that public financing of elections is an important element in the breaking up of the duopoly condition of Democratic-Republican hegemony?
I do, and basically we face a crisis in this country today, and I basically consider Washington, D.C. to be occupied territory. It's totally dominated by corporate interests. We see bills being written on K Street and then introduced in the Congress. Our Congress is totally awash in money. But for people like Obie and Frank and others to talk about giving up that money, it's like listening to the addict arguing one more time how they're going to change their behavior. It's not going to happen. They're absolutely addicted to this money.
Talk a little bit about the 3099, the bill from Representative Turney, and what you know about that and how that might be different from what the Obie Frank bill calls for.
Sure. I have to admit I only recently downloaded a full copy of H.R. 3099. I'm just starting to take a look at it.
Right.
And I think what I see here is we might be able to work with Mr. Turney on this bill and really address the concerns that third parties have. I see this as a more genuine bill than H.R. 4694.
Are you at all familiar with AB 583, the Clean Money, Clean Elections bill in California?
A little bit, but not real familiar.
Well, I'll refer you to our website where you can hear a lot about it and see what that how that sounds to you. It essentially involves candidates collecting a certain number of $5 contributions and then qualifying for the ballot and the qualifying for the funding that way. It comes from
the
Assemblywoman from Berkeley, which is pretty much a green stronghold, I would say, and therefore it seems to be more third-party friendly.
Yeah.
Is the Green Party working on its own bill or a set of principles about how public financing ought to be established?
I think we're going to want to take a good hard look at this, and it may be that in the end we will end up drafting a bill that we think is more ideal and then begin shopping for sponsors.
What kind of principles would, just sort of off the top of your head, what kind of principles do you think ought to be implemented in a public financing bill so that it would be third-party friendly?
Well, I think we should have a fair playing field. There shouldn't be separate classes. Many of these bills operate somehow thinking that somehow it's in our Constitution to only have two political parties. But in fact, when our Constitution was written, there was strong hostility towards any political parties. And what's happened over time is the two major political parties have taken on this role, and the Supreme Court has, in essence, reinforced this role, that their job is to protect government from the people, and their job is to isolate government from the people,
which is a role we would definitely challenge. Do you see a Green Party campaign in favor of its own brand of public financing as an important wedge issue by which the Green Party can establish its differences with the Democratic and Republican parties and build itself up?
Sure, I think we're going to want to take a good look at that. And you know, one of the things that really identifies us as Greens in the United States is the fact that we do not accept corporate contributions. So we are not beholden to corporations.
Are there any Green members of the U.S. Congress at this point?
There are not.
Okay. How do you see this bill by Representatives Obie and Frank as an effort to maintain that status quo?
Well, clearly they're going to try to close the door. They're going to try to make it where there's no way to build up a party to mount a significant challenge. And each cycle we get a little stronger, we gain ground towards mounting the challenge, and they see that, and they're trying to head us off. And so what they want to do is make the hurdle so high that there's no way anybody can build a base to ever get to that point.
Okay, and why don't we wrap up by letting you say how the Green Party is going to go moving forward from here to establish its presence on this and other issues?
Well, we're running some strong campaigns this year, and I'm really impressed with the quality of candidates that are coming forward to run for Congress. An example is Michael Berg, who's the father of Nicholas Berg, who was kidnapped and beheaded in Iraq, who's now running for House in Delaware against Mike Castle, who voted for the War Powers Act and voted for the Patriot Act. We have Ray Vogler, a strong anti-war activist in Wisconsin, who's running. And I think is a very high quality candidate.
Why don't you give the website where people who want more information about the Green Party and its particular campaigns can get that information?
Sure. If you go to our website at www.gp.org, you can learn more about the candidates that we have running this cycle and also our positions on these issues.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for talking to us today on American Politics Today.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Have a great day.